So first of all, let's talk about yourself. What's your story? What's your background? And how did you get interested in theater?
I am half Thai and half Australian. And I've been doing theater, sort of like weird indie theater in Australia, since I was really young. And I sort of tried everything. I was like a designer, mostly a sound designer, did some like acting and directing. And it wasn't until I came to grad school in New York that I got interested in writing for the theater. So, and then I kind of stumbled into being a playwright.
And how does your parents feel about this? Because, you know, in my experience, Asian parents are not very enthusiastic.
I think my mother was really worried about me being an artist when I was growing up as a kid, particularly about being a designer. She really wanted me to be a neurosurgeon. Of course, you know, because Asian parents. But I stubbornly rebelled and kept going down the artist track. And I think now that I'm comfortably making a living doing it, she's begrudgingly accepted it.
You proved to her that you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, for now.
What about, like, in your as a playwright, right? Your colleagues, your fellow students, are there many Asians there?
I mean, yeah, one of the nice things about the kinds of plays that I write is that they usually center Asian characters. I'm really interested in, like, the politics of representation and making sure that we have more complex Asian characters in media. So a lot of my colleagues are Asian, Asian American. Like, for example, in Golden Shield, the role of the translator was kind of written for Fong because we went to grad school together. And I knew that he was this really extraordinary actor who could speak both Mandarin and English, and I was like, let's use him.
So let's talk about the play, right? Why Golden Shield? What made you interested in this topic?
I mean, like most of my plays, I was reading about it. I was reading about the real court cases that the play is based on, where Chinese plaintiffs sued American tech companies for their purported collusion with the Chinese government in helping to build the Great Firewall. And I thought it was such an interesting set of ethical conundrums that these cases raised. So then I just started doing an enormous amount of research into both the development of the Great Firewall in China and into how these cases got arbitrated.
And how is the American general public receiving it? Are they familiar with the topic?
You know, it's interesting. The play had a production in Australia before it had a production here, and I think Australian audiences were far more aware because of, you know, Australia's close relationship to China, of the issues in the play. I think American audiences actually, a lot of them, we had no idea that there is a sort of completely different internet in China. Unless you're sort of like reading a lot of global news, I think a lot of Americans are learning a lot from the play. But a lot of the play is about, you know, as American consumers, our complicity in supporting these companies that have helped to create these tools of oppression overseas. So it's not as simple as, you know, like China is oppressive, America is liberal and a democracy. The play sort of tries to complicate that. And I think American audiences are really engaging with that.
So for your audience, right, when they walk out of the theater after the play, what do you want them to know? What are you trying to tell them?
I think the message of the play ultimately is that, like, as fraught as communication is, communication between different cultures, communication over the internet, communication like between family members and loved ones, as impossible as it is, it's like necessary. It's like the only tool that we have. It's what makes us human. And I hope that people leave the play realizing that, like, the struggle to communicate is what makes us fundamentally human.
So you have different topics of the play, communications, loyalty, of course, censorship, and also the delicate art of translation. Yeah. Why?
I mean, because I knew I wanted to write about this story, which is a Sino-American story, I knew I wanted the play to be in both Mandarin and in English. And when I was trying to work out how to do that, I realized that there could be this central figure in the play who's just the translator, and he translates not just the literal languages, but like the subtext of the play, the paratext. And that really opened up the world of the play. It meant that I could talk about a huge amount of issues and never worry that I was going to lose the audience, because they always have this like gentle guide to explain these really big issues to them.
Let's talk about your characters. I'm very interested in Julie and Eva. So before we talk about their relationships, can you tell us about what characters are they and why they're like who they are?
Sure. So Julie and Eva are like the sisters in the play. Julie is a lawyer arbitrating one of these cases, and Eva is her younger sister, and she hires her as her translator. And a lot of the play is about their complex relationship to being Chinese American, which is really tied up in this traumatic relationship that they had with their Chinese mother. And they've responded to that trauma in really different ways. Julie becomes this sort of like hard-nosed, emotionally unavailable lawyer with a lot of like suppressed rage, but a lot of drive and righteousness. And Eva becomes much more of a mediator. She becomes much more sort of calculated, and she views relationships as like very transactional. And I really wanted the play to explore like the tension between those two sisters and their desire to connect as a metaphor for the larger themes in the play about our desire to communicate even when it's such a fraught endeavor.
They're sisters, but Julie spent her whole adult life in America, and Eva spent a crucial time in China. How does that make them different?
Because Eva is the younger sibling and spent a lot more time in China than Julie, Eva has more cultural fluency moving between the two worlds and is actually, you know, fluent in Mandarin, which Julie is not. And that really informs her worldview. She is much more, she has a much more nuanced understanding of Chinese culture, whereas Julie's understanding of Chinese culture, there's a lot of like self-directed racism towards her own Chineseness, and that comes from her sense of alienation to her home culture. And I think that the relationship between the two of them is kind of stages a conflict I think anybody in the diaspora experiences, where you when you feel alienated from your home culture and trying to move between the two worlds.
So for this traumatic relationship between Julie and Eva, how much does their mother play?
It's a huge part of their relationship and is like the wound at the core of their relationship that means that they can't communicate effectively with each other. And the play sort of dances around exactly what that relationship was. You sort of get a sense that it was an extremely emotionally damaging environment and that their mother was kind of tyrannical. But just like they can't talk about it because it's like too much to talk about, the play doesn't really talk about it. And it, like the play doesn't talk about their core traumas, it implies them. Like, there's this line where the translator goes, "We won't speak of the father because, of course, they never did." And I think that's also very true of Asian families.
Yeah. Not talking about it is very Asian.
Very Asian. Not talking about your core familial traumas, I think, is a deeply Asian experience.
Do you think the American public gets it?
I think everybody can relate to having stuff in your family that you don't talk about. And I think everybody can relate to, you know, how messy and complicated families are, and this desire to stay bonded even when you're growing apart as people. I think that's universal. There are things about Eva and Julie's relationship that feels very specific to their Chinese-American heritage, but then there's also things about the dynamic that feel really universal to all families. So I think American audiences do take that away from it, even if they don't understand necessarily some of the nuances of their cultural experience.
I remember in one of the acts, right, Julie's boss, Richard, asked her that what is her drive to pursue the case? Mm. What is her drive?
I think he ultimately, well, that's the question of the play, actually. Like, what is she actually driven by? And the play proposes a lot of different things that it could be, which I think is true of people who experience a lot of formative trauma. Sometimes they're driven by a sense of righteousness and they don't really know where it's coming from, and it's a corrective to the trauma that you've experienced as a kid. So Eva sort of thinks that Julie's drive is really about like getting revenge against her mother, and sort of she sees the Chinese government as a metaphor for her mother, basically, as like a totalitarian force that she has to like strive to defeat. Richard's has a more nuanced perspective on that. He thinks that it's just a sort of primal desire to to win at any cost. And I think that that's true of a lot of lawyers, true of a lot of activists. The desire to win, politicians, the desire to win can sometimes muddy the intent that you set out with. The desire to win kind of subsumes the moral system that you had gotten into that business to in the first place.
What about Max? What is his drive?
His drive is efficiency. And he's really, in some ways, he's the most archetypal character in the play because he is a software engineer, even though he ends up in management. He really represents this desire to, this utilitarian desire for efficiency at all cost. The tension in that character is that he sort of can't understand the moral reverberations of the decisions that he's making and the tools that he's giving the Ministry of Public Security.
And at any point did he feel that, oh, I might be doing something wrong?
Right at the end of the play. I mean, I think everybody at the end of the play has a real moment of crisis where they wonder about the moral relativism of what they're doing. And I really like that he remains sort of like doggedly unpleasant for almost the entire play. And then right at the end, he has a moment of being like, am I the bad guy? Which I think is very satisfying to watch as an audience.
Right. But I mean, for Max, right, for Marshall, mm-hmm. As a software engineer, seeking efficiency is not wrong.
Yeah.
But at what point should he take morality into consideration?
Yeah, and I think that's the question that everybody's having for these tech multinationals right now. It's like if efficiency is your ultimate remit and you wash your hands of any moral responsibility for the way that people use your hyper-efficient tools, who's responsible, you know? And that's the question.
What is your take on that?
Yeah, and I think that they are ultimately responsible. Of course, these... I think tech multinationals would like us to believe that the tools and the platforms that they create are neutral, are like morally neutral, and then the ways in which they're employed are what give them sort of negative connotations. But if you create a platform that enables censorship or sex trafficking, I think you are culpable. I think that, and I think you can't absolve yourself of that culpability just because it's a tool.
But for these corporates, right, private sectors, is it too much to ask them to be responsible for the users, the public?
I think, that's a really nuanced question. Like, and both things are true. I think, obviously, the criminal syndicates or the oppressive governments who are using these tools in nefarious ways are equally culpable. But I do think that there has to be more political oversight around these corporations, and there has to be more private culpability. And in China and America, it's two sides of the same coin. The internet is being used to shut down discourse in different ways. So I think that's what the play really wants to explore. It's not as simple as, big bad China oppressing its citizenry through shutting down discourse online and creating a domestic internet. It's look at the ways that in both countries the internet is being used to shut down communication.
And in the future, do you still want to write about Asian American?
That's a really complicated question for me. I obviously am extremely invested in making sure that there's more nuanced representation of Asian Americans, Asian Australians in Western media, because I think it's sorely lacking. But I also am very aware of like being pigeonholed or subjectified by my own identity politics. So I would like to not feel restricted to only being able to tell Asian stories because I'm Asian. I am far more interested in telling stories about globalization and technology writ large on a macrocosmic scale. So whatever cultural form that takes, I don't want to police myself based on my own identity politics.